It's been a couple of weeks. We got a lot of things to catch up on with Mike Grimm. Not a Mike Grimm Monday. I was off on Monday. It's a Mike Grimm Wednesday, middle of the week with Mike. We got to talk about the Pinstripe Bowl, talk Vikings, talk about the Gopher basketball game last night in Madison, the voice of Golden Gopher Athletics, and, of course, the sports director at the Minnesota News Network. Mike Grimm joins us. And, Mike, a good afternoon and a happy new year.
Yeah, happy new year, Aaron. Always fun to be on with you. Yeah, not only is it not a Mike Grimm Monday, it's not even a Mike Grimm Tuesday, you know. So we're into Wednesday now, which is fine. And, you know, whenever you start a segment with Welcome to the Jungle, there's no choice but to be fired up.
Absolutely. Now, we could go back and then move forward, but I want to talk about the most recent event, and then we'll go backwards with our conversation. And let's talk about the game last night against the Badgers in Madison. 63-60 loss. The Buckeyes, ranked 14th or 15th in the country, get the victory. I know Ben Johnson probably doesn't want moral victories for his team, but they played very well against one of the top teams in the country. A lot of positives they can take away from this game. 20 turnovers for the Gophers, probably the big number that stands out. But overall, besides winning the game, I think a lot of good things happened last night in Madison.
Yeah, I thought so too. It seemed, though, that we could not talk Ben Johnson into that idea in our postgame interview. He was disappointed in the fact that they couldn't win that game. Remember, Wisconsin was playing without Tyler Wall for the last basic 30 minutes of the game, their leading scorer with injury. And so, you know, the Gophers were trying to take advantage a little bit of that. But I agree with you. That was by far the best intensity level, the best rebounding effort that this team has had all year. I mean, they crushed Wisconsin on the glass. And again, they were without their leading scorer and rebounder. But that said, I thought you had Jameson Battle with 9 rebounds, Dawson Garcia with 9 rebounds. Joshua Ola-Joseph just would not be denied. He batted some balls and kept them alive to the point at which, you know, the Gophers were able to get some second-chance points. And it's the first time all year where they were crashing the offensive glass. Some of this by design that they don't. They want to get back on defense. They don't want to give up transition buckets. But I think when you're down 15, you got to take some risk. And they felt we need some extra possessions, particularly with the way they turned the ball over. So if they can rebound that way, and I hope they continue to be aggressive on the offensive rebounding side of it. I personally would be, you know, I'm coach zero college basketball, zero basketball ever in my life. But I think I'd be willing to give up a transition bucket once or twice for the idea of hoping to go get 10 or 12 offensive rebounds in a game. And I hope they're aggressive that way, because I thought that they played their best basketball in the stretch where they were crashing the offensive glass. And obviously, you're right, the big bugaboo was the turnovers. They just some careless mistakes. And I think, again, those are things you got to live through with a young team. And Wisconsin does force some turnovers. They're very disciplined on defense, but not 20. They haven't done, you know, they haven't done it that way. And frankly, the Gophers didn't shoot the ball particularly well in the first half. So there's still some meat on the bone there, I think, as you mentioned, to have some things that, you know, you feel good about heading into the rest of the Big Ten slate.
And it probably was kind of ironic that we had the ball. Gophers had the ball with a chance to maybe shoot a three, and they turn it over in the final seconds. I mean, kind of ironic. That's kind of the way the game ended.
Yeah, look, Wisconsin's smart. That player, Chucky Hepburn, is smart too, and a good defender. And he, you know, he played that perfectly because, you know, in his mind, he's thinking a couple of things. One, if I get beat here, like if I gamble and don't get the steal, I'll let him have the layup because
Correct.
Speaking from his standpoint, Wisconsin's up 3. You want a layup to cut it to 1, go ahead, you know, with 3 or 4 seconds left. So he knew he had no worries of getting beat. And if he did, it didn't matter. 2, I don't know if they were strategizing to foul or not. I saw somebody comment after the game that he was actually trying to foul. You know, when you're up 3, that's the age old debate. Do you foul at center of the line or do you, you know, roll the dice and see if they miss the 3? And so he could be aggressive there, right, on the steal. And if he, you know, whacked the guy in the arm, no big deal. You got to go, you know, make one, miss one, and hope that weird stuff happens, and you're likely going to win if you're Wisconsin. And so he had a couple of things going in his favor for that turnover. But, yeah, that was pretty disappointing not to at least get a shot in the air to try to try to at least tie the game and send it to overtime. Because, honestly, I think if it goes to overtime, that's enough time. The Gophers were just fighting that uphill battle. They were down 15 twice, and they just were pecking away and pecking away. And I think if they could have finally evened it, there's a chance they could have gone on to win that game in overtime.
Again, Gopher men's team, they fall to Wisconsin last night. 15th-ranked Wisconsin, 63-60. Gophers 0-3 in the Big Ten, 6-7 overall. They're going to host Nebraska coming up on Saturday. And, of course, we'll have that game for you right here on KATE. Mike Grimm, Monday on a Wednesday. And, Mike, let's go back to last year. I want to hear about the trip to New York. The Gophers get it done. They pick up a victory in the Pinstripe Bowl against Syracuse. P.J. Fleck unbeaten in bowl games as a head coach. Just kind of point out some of the fun parts of your trip. I know you did a lot more than just broadcast a football game.
Yeah, so I'd say a couple of things. One, it's good to get a win in a bowl game always. It's good to have another 9-win season now in the last 3 full seasons where they've played at least 9 games. The Gophers have won at least 9 games. They were 9-4 this year, 9-4 last year, and then in 2019, of course, that 11-2 season, the COVID year mixed in the middle where they played just 7 games. So, you know, that's a good trend. I mean, that is maintaining where you're at. You hope to, you know, build on that as the program progresses. But, and there certainly were some missed opportunities in the season. I don't think anyone can deny that, opportunity to potentially get to Indianapolis was there for the taking and they couldn't capitalize. But that said, in relative terms to where, this program has been traditionally, to have this kind of success over the course of a 4 or 5 year stretch is encouraging. I don't think there's any doubt about that. So that's the 30,000-foot view. To win the game, the Gophers were a big favorite in this game, partially because Syracuse had so many opt-outs and transfers. However, you have to remember the Gophers ended up having, as it turned out, because they kept it much more quiet than Syracuse, they also had a lot of transfers, and they had one player in John Michael Schmitz opt out, and then Mo Ibrahim didn't play the second half once he set the record, so kind of a mid-game opt out, so to speak. And then within the game, they suffered an injury to their starting quarterback. Now it's good to have a guy like Tanner Morgan, who's won more games than anybody ever in a maroon and gold uniform, as your backup, and he came in and was good. And so they also, missed, they got their middle linebacker injured and Cody Lindenberg, their starting cornerback injured and Terrell Smith. So they were also playing a little shorthanded. By the time it was all said and done, I think both teams, were playing a lot of second, third team players. So from that standpoint, personnel wise, it was, I think, even in terms of who was missing what. And for the Gophers then to hold on and win at 28-20 was a nice feather in the cap. And as you mentioned, P.J. Fleck now is 4-0 in bowl games in Minnesota. So at Minnesota. So and Minnesota now with a 6-game winning streak in bowl games in general. And, I thought they played fine. Defense stepped up when it had to. They gave up a lot of yards, but they bent, didn't break, forced a couple of field goals in the second half, which was great. Got a pick 6 defensively, got a nice kick return on special teams to set up a short field and a touchdown. So did the things they had to do to win the football game.
Now, Mike, besides the Pinstripe Bowl victory, tell us what else you did on your trip to New York. What did the tourist Mike Grimm do in the Big Apple?
Well, believe it or not, there was work to be done. So I didn't have a lot of touristy time, because I was going to practices during the day to watch that, do interviews and taped a podcast and a bunch of stuff, and I don't know one's going to feel sorry for me. I enjoyed it. I've been on a few bowl trips, and I love the one in Tampa because of the weather. But just in terms of stuff to do and where you were located, because at Tampa, this is like a real, third world problem here, so to speak. The hotel was beautiful. We stayed at Tampa. We were in the team hotel, but it was kind of isolated. And the same last year in Phoenix, it was a long ways from stuff. And of course, the beauty of New York City is you're, a 5-minute walk from something no matter where you're at. And, this team hotel was in Midtown Manhattan. And, so the players in all the bowl games, I think, just in observing, I haven't talked to any players about it, but just in observing, I think this was the most fun the players have had on a bowl trip that I have seen, because they were, like I said, they're just able to do stuff because you leave the hotel room and there's stuff including food, and everybody loves food. And so, yes, to answer your first question about me, like, what did I do? I didn't do much touristy stuff, but we did find some places to eat. We had a nice steakhouse one night. We went to a French place. The ESPN announcer, Wes Durham, he did the game on TV, is a friend of mine from years gone by. And so he was there with his wife. So I met them for a dinner at this French place that his wife recommended. And it was great. It was good to share stories that night. And then we went to an old fashioned New York deli for lunch one day and spent $28 on a Reuben, which is, you know, what else would you want to do for lunch but a $28 Reuben? So food, you know, I'm a food guy, so that was fun. And then on Wednesday, the day before the bowl game, they had what they call the Yankee Stadium walkthrough. So I was there with the team, and just to walk on the turf, we were on the field. They took a team picture. Of course, I wasn't in the team picture, but I was watching it all unfold, and you're at Yankee Stadium, and that's when I first got the idea this could be a rough field condition. It was hard, yeah, as a rock. It was like a driveway, as you'd expect. It's frozen turf. It's real grass. And, you know, once it started to get cold and players started running on it, you know, that was going to happen, and it did. But I am in favor of not doing a lot of bowl games at baseball stadiums. It seems Fenway Park had footing issues. It seems Arizona for a second straight year had footing issues. But then, you know, I got thinking about it. I watched that Vikings-Packers game, and everyone was slipping and sliding on Sunday in that game. So I don't know if it's because of the baseball field or just that, look, it's winter. You're in a cold weather city, and you're trying to play football on grass. It is likely dormant, you know. So I don't know the answer to that. But I will say this. Wednesday, just walking around on that field, and I know it's the new Yankee Stadium. It doesn't have the same history as the old one, but it's still, there's that aura, and it looks like the old one. And so that was really cool. I enjoyed that. And then to expand on it a little bit, in terms of what the players were able to do, they flew in on Christmas night, got to the hotel, had about an hour to kind of unpack and get settled, and then jumped right back on the bus and went to the Radio City Music Hall. And on Christmas night, got to watch the Christmas special from the Rockettes. I mean, how cool is that, right? That's something that people spend thousands and thousands of dollars on to go do on the Christmas night show, especially. And these guys got to do that as part of the trip. They got to go to Madison Square Garden on Tuesday night of bowl week with, it was the Washington Capitals and New York Rangers in an NHL game. And they were sitting way up at the top. They got upper, you know, the cheap seat, so to speak. But look, most of these guys had not been to New York City, you know, talking to a lot of them. And so to experience those kind of things, they went to Ground Zero on Wednesday morning. And, you know, it's a little weird because, you know, time goes fast, and most of these players weren't even born when the terrorist attack hit back in, you know, 2001. But certainly it's one of the big impactful things. And so I did not go with the team there, but talking with people who were with the team definitely was moved. I've been to that before. I was in New York, I don't know, 10 years ago, 8 years ago, and toured it. And it is a sombering thing, a sobering thing, but it is also worthwhile. And I think the team appreciated that. So they were able to do some stuff. And then PJ gave him some free time on Monday and on Wednesday. No, on Monday and on Tuesday. And so I think the guys enjoyed going out and eating and finding different things to do. And I know a couple of guys went to even a show, you know, on Broadway. So I think, like I said, it, just in my observation, I'd say it was it looked to me like the players are having more fun than they have on previous bowl trips, and previous trips have been fun. So outside of the playing surface, and then personally for me, nobody cares. It was a ridiculous place to try to do a broadcast from. It was great. We were in the Yankees radio booth, which is right behind home plate, which is also right behind the goalpost. So we were looking from the end zone, from home plate out to center field, which is exactly the way the field ran. So when it was on the other side of the field, I was 180 yards from the play, watching it parallel, I guess. And so that made it a little tricky. But outside of that, it was, I thought, just a wonderful, wonderful trip.
I saw the picture that you posted, your press box view from Yankee Stadium, and I was showing friends that picture, and obviously they're not broadcasters, so they don't get how hard that is to do. But I said, Mike Grimm's out there, but he has to do it from the end zone, which anyone that's ever done a football game, it's almost impossible. I mean, lucky you got monitors and everything else, but if you're just doing a game from there without replay help or monitor help as a broadcaster, it's tough go. I mean, you're going to miss some things, and sometimes it's hard to tell if a guy ran 3 yards or 8 yards when they put you in that kind of position.
No doubt, and at a couple of points, I just had to say that. Like, I don't know. I would, and sometimes you're relying on the scoreboard, and they were also in the end zone because that's where the you know, AV, the audio stuff and video stuff was also in the end zone. So even those guys weren't sure. So it'd flash up 2nd and 7, and I'd say 2nd and 7, and then all of a sudden I looked down at the monitor and it was like 2nd and 2, and I'm like, well, they messed it up too. So even at times, and I think I'm usually on top of it, and I hope people didn't notice too much, but there were a few times in the broadcast where I'm like, it's 3rd down. And then all of a sudden I'm like, it can't be 3rd. What down is it here? Yeah, I mean, you just even lost track of downs because when you're on the sideline, you can just look down at the chains if you forget, and there's a lot going on, as you know. In a broadcast. So you couldn't utilize the tools you usually would utilize to offer some background. So hopefully people weren't too bugged by it or didn't even notice. But it was a challenge. Honestly, it was more challenging than I thought it was going to be. My colleagues, the Gophers were the 8th Big Ten team in the last 8 years to go. And so I have some friends, obviously, in the business. And the Wisconsin guy texted me, hey, good luck with that. The Iowa guy said, hey, yeah, it's a terrible view. The Indiana guy sent me a picture of when they were there like 10 years ago or 8 years ago or whatever it was. And they all said, yeah, and I'm like, we'll handle it. And we did. But I will say it was harder than I thought it was going to be going in. But like I said, nobody's going to worry about the radio guy. And I'm not complaining about it. Actually, it's a good story, to tell.
Absolutely.
So, you're sitting in, literally I was sitting in John Sterling's chair,
which
was
kind of
cool. The longtime voice of the Yankees, doing a game. So.
Because did you not tweet and it was supposed to be Gophers win, Gophers win, like he says when the Yankees win.
Yeah. So there were a couple of things I wanted. There were a couple of things that I wanted just for the fun of it, because if you can't have fun, what are you doing it for, right? So what I wanted to do is, if the Gophers won, is to actually say it on the air, and then I just got sidetracked and forgot. So, hey, the Gophers win, whatever. But, yeah, I wanted to go, Gophers win, right? Just the tip of the cap to the fact we're at Yankee Stadium. And John Sterling, that's his signature mark when the Yankees win. And he really gets into it. If people have ever – seen it, there's videos and memes out there of him, like he's shaking his hands and in the air when he does it. And then obviously his signature home run call is, it is high, it is far. And I wanted to, if the Gophers were going to kick a field goal, just for the fun of it, when the ball's in the air, it is a snap, a spot, a kick, and it is high. But the Gophers never attempted a field goal, so I didn't get a chance to do that. I did get one Sterling-ism in, so to speak, when Ibrahim scored his first touchdown. And for people who are broadcasting geeks like we are, Aaron, they will know that Sterling also does, for many of the power hitters on the Yankees over the years, he has a little signature call. Aaron Judge has his own, and, Alfonso Soriano back in the day, and whoever else, Mike Stanton. And so when Ibrahim scored the touchdown, I tried a little bit of an impersonation, more as a tribute, not as a copy or a imitation. And if people listen, they heard me say something like, Mo, don't you know it's a touchdown, which is totally would be up John Sterling's alley. So we did get one on the air, but you're right. I did tweet out after the game that in words, not in video, that the Gophers win. The Gophers win. Yeah, which was fun.
Mike Grimm, voice of Golden Gopher Sports on a Wednesday. He'll join us on Monday on the irregular schedule coming up next week. We'll talk a lot about the Vikings coming up on Monday. Before I let you go, we got a couple minutes left. I do want to ask you your thoughts about the national championship game coming up in college football on Monday. A TCU taking on Georgia. Both Big Ten teams get defeated in just extraordinary football games on New Year's Eve. The college football playoff committee must be ecstatic what they saw or what they got, because those are two amazing games. Thoughts on that, and also your thoughts on Jim Harbaugh for the second year in a row, possibly tinkering with the idea of being an NFL coach.
Yeah, you're right. So a couple of things. I watched both games. I was enthralled by both games. And obviously high scoring, that Michigan defense is really good. I was surprised TCU was able to have as much success. That said, remember, 14 of those points came on pick sixes.
Yep.
You know, the percent of chance, if you get one interception return for a touchdown, your chances of winning, it's incredible. And then two, it's almost impossible to win that game if you give two of them up. And yet Michigan was right there with an opportunity to potentially win it late. And, you know, Frank, you know, look, the butterfly effect, who knows where the game would have gone, but I don't know how they overturned that touchdown on the long pass. It would have been Michigan, I think, first touchdown. So when the score is, what was it, 44-40 or whatever it was, I can't remember now, but I think both teams, was it 50-something? Now I think it might have been.
It might have got to 50, yeah.
Yeah, I think it was like 51-48 or something. But when you score that many points, it's hard to say, well, back in the first quarter, they took a touchdown off the board. But it wasn't even points. They didn't even get, you know, a field goal. And then remember, they drove right down on the first drive and on fourth and two tried a trick play. So that's 14 points there as well. But I don't know how they overturned that. I don't know. I don't know how people who are trained to be officials would look at that and suggest that that should be overturned as a non-touchdown. Yes, his bottom hit, but he had not secured the ball clearly until he was in across the goal line. So even officials who I follow on Twitter who do this for a living in terms of, you know, their commentators now on the TV networks, all were like, that play absolutely had to stand as a touchdown. So I don't know, you know, part of the lore of the game now. I was pulling for the Big Ten. I'm not a huge, you know, Michigan, Ohio State guy. They have all the advantages, certainly with budgets and everything, and it's hard to compete against them. That said, I would have liked to have seen the Big Ten get into the championship game just from a reputation standpoint. And Michigan couldn't do it. And then Ohio State, they were on the verge. 15-point fourth-quarter lead. You figure that's safe, but it wasn't. And then they set up for a game-winning field goal, which turned out not to be close, as everyone saw. And it was a shame because they really, I thought, you know, I think TCU probably deserved to win that Michigan game, even though I think Michigan's probably the better team, and that's what the beauty of sports is. But, boy, I thought Ohio State deserved to win that game. I thought they outplayed Georgia for most of that contest. You know, they made plays when they had to, and then Georgia, because they're Georgia and they have talent, made enough plays late to win it, and then had to sweat out a last field goal attempt. So, but I thought Ohio State outplayed them. I thought anyone who thought that Ohio State backed into the playoffs, which they did and didn't deserve it, I think they showed they deserved to be in. There's no doubt about that, as one of the best four teams in the country.
TCU 51, Michigan 45. Ohio State gets beat by a point by Georgia 42-41. And, of course, we had talked to Mike Grimm for a long time. It's always fun to catch up with the voice of Golden Gopher Sports, sports director of the Minnesota News Network. We got a run for this Wednesday, but Mike will join us at our normal time on Monday. We can break down the NFL playoffs coming up next Monday. By that time, we'll know where the Vikings are or who the Vikings are hosting for the first round of the NFL Wild Card Weekend. Mike, thank you so much for the time. Have you a great week, and we'll talk on Monday.
All right, look forward to it, Aaron. I always enjoy it. Thank you.